rahmatullah.
You just listened to the program Hadith of the Day on Iran Radio with Sheikh Danish, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad.
Bring us out from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Welcome, everyone. U.S. President Donald Trump and his government are undertaking a widespread visa review process, revoking hundreds of visas and placing hundreds more under scrutiny, targeting mostly foreign nationals engaged in pro-Palestine activism. Secretary of State Marco Rubio confirmed the scale of the crackdown, announcing that he's canceled visas for more than 300 people that he called lunatics connected to campus pro-Palestine protests throughout America. This controversial campaign flies directly in the face of America's constitutional guarantees. Arrests, detentions, and deportations of young women and men speaking out against genocide and ethnic cleansing by U.S. authorities is the focus of this edition of your Spotlight program. And now for our guests. Joining us, Mr. Daniel Kobalik, author and activist, joining us out of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania in the U.S. Mr. Paul LaRudy, former U.S. government advisor, joining us out of Berkeley, California, also in the States.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Gentlemen, I'd like to welcome you both to the program. I guess, Daniel, we'll start with you out there in Pittsburgh. Now, why does a young Turkish-born PhD student, Daniel, have to be treated like a criminal, arrested, accosted by U.S. authorities in broad daylight by masked men, undercover agents, for writing an op-ed in her university school paper asking Tufts University to cut ties with Israel? Daniel, her name, Rumeysa Ozturk, 30 years old, PhD student. Now, these are people usually, Danny, we celebrate in humanity, not ostracize and incarcerate. What is going on?
Yeah, well, it is, you know, insane that, you know, the U.S., which purports to be a bastion of free speech and democracy, is treating its guests like this, you know, and these are people from other countries who have a right to be here, a legal right. And by the way, they have a First Amendment right to free speech under the Constitution. Some of the Bill rights are written in a way that they only protect citizens, but not the First Amendment. It protects everyone in the United States, even you know, green card holders or other visa holders. So what's being done is unconstitutional. But it's also just wrong. I mean, what kind of message does it send to the rest of the world that we would treat, you know, young scholars, young students this way? And they're not just being deported, you know, they're being basically kidnapped and sent to undisclosed locations. They can't communicate with people. It really is shameful. I've never seen anything like it, actually, in my lifetime.
Thank you, Daniel and Paul. Welcome to the conversation here to our in our Spotlight program. Good to have you. Paul, earlier in the month, this all kicked off, you very well remember, with Mahmoud Khalil's case, creating international uproar. A Ivy League student, Columbia University, a renowned top university in the States. You can imagine what kind of kids attend this esteemed institution. One of the brilliant minds, I should say, of our world. His wife, an American citizen. The Trump administration revoked his green card for what they called anti-Semitic support for Hamas. So how does, Paul, anti-genocide, anti-apartheid, anti-ethnic cleansing, anti-occupation somehow make you an enemy of the Jewish people, a racist, a bigot?
It doesn't matter if you're an enemy of the Jewish people. Not to say that he is. I have no indication that he's an enemy I know very few people who are enemies of the Jewish people. But the point is, we have free speech in this country, and you're entitled to speak against Jewish people or Christian people or Muslim people, or you're entitled to be a bigot in this country. It's not illegal to be deluded and nasty and all of these sort of things. But he's not. It doesn't matter. The point is to paint him as an enemy of Israel and of the United States. And besides, what country are we in? Are we in Israel or are we in the United States?
Hmm.
And it's plain to me to see that we're graduating. We're moving towards a country that is run by Zionism. You can see it everywhere in all the policies that we have. So, where is Zionism in the Constitution of the United States? Where is it in the international law? And I don't remember Zionism being part of Judaism until the 19th century either. This is nonsense. These people have the right to their opinion, but they do not have the right to cause other people to lose their rights and privileges, and they do not have the right to enforce their ideas to the detriment, including the mortal detriment of the Palestinian people or anyone else. It's as simple as that.
And Daniel, another student here, Badar Khan Suri, a Georgetown scholar from India, his wife, also an American citizen. Now, the U.S., you very well know, has made quite a fuss about a dual U.S.-Israeli nationals that are being held captive in Gaza. So where is that protection for spouses of American citizens? Please tell me that religion, Daniel, is not a part of the reason these young boys and girls are being targeted.
Well, I don't think it's really religion. I agree with Paul that, you know, this is about Zionism, which, oh, I suppose it's a religion of sorts, but it's not, a true part of Judaism. And that's what really this is about. It's about, well, there's a few things happening here. I mean, in essence, this is about protecting U.S. policy towards Israel. It's about defending the genocide that's happening in Gaza right now. I just read from Haaretz, which is an Israeli newspaper, that in one evening, Israel killed 300 Palestinians in Gaza. I mean, it's just extraordinary. And the U.S. cannot defend this, and so it has to crack down on people who raise this issue. And so what this is about is going after people they think they can legally go after. Again, I don't think they can under the First Amendment, but it's certainly easier to go after, visa holders rather than citizens. And they're doing this in order to chill dissent, to send a message to people that if you speak out for Palestine, even if you're a Palestinian, by the way, you will be punished. And what a lot of people are predicting, and I predicted myself, is they're going to first come for the visa holders, and then they're going to come for citizens. They will start doing this to U.S. citizens, right? Especially when they try to come back into the country from travel. So this is a slippery slope, and it's quite concerning.
It's interesting you brought that up, because that was going to be one of my questions, that once they've exhausted going after, because we know these thousands upon thousands of protests over the last 16, 17 months now, that they've involved more than just immigrants, the majority being U.S. citizens on these college campuses. So what are they going to do when they exhaust going after immigrants? But we'll get to that. Yoon So Chang, Paul, young Korean-born lady. As a matter of fact, her entire life, beyond 6 years old, she was in the States. Also a Columbia University student. Now her arrest for protesting the college expulsion of pro-Palestinian activists and students. The U.S. First Amendment, Paul, and to Daniel and your point, not the second, not the third, but First Amendment to the U.S. Constitution gives you the right, free assembly, free speech, religion, and press. So why is the U.S. willing, Paul, to throw all of this out for the Israeli regime, targeting kids and gifted kids at that, Paul, standing for humanity for a regime that cares little about it?
Well, that's it. If you want to have a regime that cares little about it, then you have to silence the voices of those who don't agree with you. This is becoming a police state here. In fact, it has been becoming a police state for a very long time. And I, just to the point of the threat to American citizens, I might point out that when I was flying back from Europe, from after visiting Palestine and the Middle East some years ago, I was stopped in Canada by the United States Immigration and Customs. And they kept me out of the United States overnight. But finally, I had to say to them that, I'm sorry, I'm an American citizen. I'm not a Canadian citizen. I didn't apply for immigration to Canada, and I don't think Canada is of a mind to accept me as a citizen. So you have no choice. You have to accept me back. You have no place else to send me. So, but it started years ago, and it's only going to get worse if we sit back and accept it. What we have to do is to resist our oppression here in the United States to the same extent that Palestinians are resisting their oppression in Palestine. We have to do this. The demonstrations are forbidden, but we have to go beyond demonstrations.
And thanks, Paul. And the thing, Daniel, here, you've spent decades giving political cover to a regime that has grossly hundreds of times violated international law, but allowing this regime, giving it cover to violate your own constitution for the Israeli entity, it seems much more personal. Not a lot of U.S. leadership seemingly would go this far. Why is this cabinet, or do you see other cabinets doing the same thing? Because we haven't seen it to this extent. We've seen the anti-Semitic label tagged on a lot of people over the decades for siding with Palestinians, but this kind of action, gross action to attack and deport college students, even with federal judges giving them waivers, and you're still going to violate the waiver and put the kid up for deportation. Why would you do this for Israel?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, I think a lot of it comes down to money. The AIPAC, the Israeli lobbying firm, gives millions and millions of dollars to candidates. Trump himself received, $100 million or something from a well-known Zionist. So a lot of it is money, but it's not just that. I mean, the truth is, if you support a genocide like the one in Gaza with billions of dollars of armaments, if you're supporting that kind of unrestrained violence, of course that violence will come home. Of course, if you're willing to do that to babies in Gaza, ultimately you will be willing to do that to your own citizens. And that's what we're seeing. And frankly, when you look at American history, the worst crackdowns on civil rights have always come in support of war, right? The ones I can think of are the First World War, where they were arresting people, very prominent people like Eugene V. Debs, for speaking out against the war. Of course, in World War II, you had the internment of the Japanese. When a country like the U.S. fights an unpopular war, and this war in Gaza is very unpopular, they end up turning to repression to defend that war.
Mm. And, Paul, these college campus protests, highly organized, highly peaceful, a strong display of what young Americans and future Americans, especially the educated, want their country to stand for, be part of, or not be a part of. How's the message here not exactly what you would want from young minds in a democracy? If you really stand as the U.S. for what you claim to stand for, how do you justify attacking the messenger in this instance?
Well, you answered the question yourself, that this would, what you, your assertion would be true in a democracy, and that's exactly what we're losing here. We're in the process of losing a democracy, and we're pretty far down the road, if you ask me, and we're going farther. I have the impression that most countries of the world have more democracy than we do right now. So, yes, human rights are being thrown in the trash barrel because the system in the United States rewards those who can get them enough money to get themselves elected, and that is the main game of the Israel, the Zionist lobby in the United States, which uses vast amounts of the money of the arms producers in this country, and it assigns essentially at least one, usually two and maybe more, to every member of Congress to stay in Washington full time, to pressure them and to advise them and to make sure that as long as they are doing the bidding of Israel, then they will be reelected. And if they don't, then they will arrange for the opposition candidate to win the next election. This is how it operates here. You can hardly, if you're in Congress, you can hardly speak out at all. And they don't. Mm. And if you're not in Congress, it seems we're going in the same direction. We're not going to be allowed to speak out.
And Daniel, I want to get into the justification U.S. authorities are using to go after, detain, and try to revoke the visas, the revocation and the deportation of these young students. Here's the justification the U.S. authorities are using. They're saying that support for Palestinians is support for Hamas. And since we as the U.S. have designated Hamas as a terrorist organization, then support for Palestinians equates to support for terrorism. Now, this conflating, you very well know, it is not sound, it's not logical, it's not rational, it is not a valid argument. In fact, Daniel, it is a fallacy. It is false reasoning, as any logician would tell you. So how sad and pathetic is this stretch that U.S. authorities cannot come up with a more consistent, more plausible, a better position to crack down on these young students?
Well, first of all, it has to be said that these anti-terrorism laws are used quite often as an end around free speech protections, right? Because they want to claim that anything you do, for example, in the case of defending Palestine, is somehow material support to Hamas, which, by the way, is absurd. I have a First Amendment right to say I support Hamas. That is not material support to them. Now, if I somehow coordinate my message with Hamas, that may be different. But in any case, just saying you support them, you have a First Amendment right to do that. But again, most of the people that are protesting are not doing it in support of Hamas. They're doing it in support of the Palestinian people. So, yes, to bootstrap it that way is very disingenuous. But again, once you get it into the terms of fighting terrorism, then a lot can be allowed to do. And that was the danger of passing this terrorist legislation after 9/11, the Patriot Patriot Act, for example, because it opened the door to repressing dissent and free speech, and that's exactly what you're seeing right now.
And Paul, can I get your take on the same failed pretext and argument to justify this crackdown?
Well, if the justification is that it gives support to Hamas, what's wrong with that? Hamas is fighting the same fight that other freedom fighters have fought around the world. They want, what are they fighting for? They're fighting for independence, for sovereignty for Palestine, for freedom to live freely in their own country. At least they want at least as much as what Israel has. In fact, they don't want it just for them. They want it for the people of Israel too. They would like to make it have a country where you can have different opinions, including the Zionists themselves, as long as you're not abrogating the rights of other people. What is wrong with this? Have you seen the way Hamas is treating the Israeli captives that they had? You can argue with the question of taking civilian captives, but in terms of the treatment, they have been kind and civil. Compare that with the way the Palestinians are treated, the Palestinian prisoners are treated, the abuse, the torture, the rape, the death of them. I would take Hamas any day, and I will fly a Hamas flag on the street. I hope Hamas will come and liberate the United States. The way we're going. But it doesn't have to be Hamas. We can liberate ourselves.
But more concerning here, what I'm trying to get at, and Daniel, help me out here, is that we've documented the most vile and extremist elements, both in Israeli society and these far-right settlers, the kind of rhetoric we hear from them, and also from the social apparatus, the political apparatus there in the current cabinet. You hear these people basically calling all Palestinians terrorists, justifying the genocide, the ethnic cleansing, saying that there is no such thing as an innocent Palestinians. You heard of them, one of them justifying dropping a nuclear bomb on Gaza. Today, how concerned should we be that very same voice and position is basically resonating with U.S. leadership in the White House and this cabinet?
Well, it certainly is resonating, and you will hear U.S. leaders in the executive branch, in the Congress, say things exactly like that, talk about the Palestinians as if all of them are terrorists from the age of, 1 day to 100, which, by the way, is genocidal talk, because obviously that is dehumanizing an entire population and saying an entire population is a legitimate military target. But the other thing that happens is when you dehumanize the other and you commit horrible atrocities against the other, like murder, rape, etc., that Paul was discussing, then you cross a line, and once that line is crossed, you're willing to do that to, people of your own nationality and ethnicity. And that's happening in Israel, right? They're raping people, abusing people, first the Palestinians, but now you're seeing Israelis being raped by other Israelis. You see women, female soldiers being raped by Israeli soldiers. And again, when the U.S. supports those types of atrocities abroad, it doesn't take much to imagine that they are on their way to doing those sorts of atrocities against their own people.
Gentlemen, thank you both for joining us on the program, and stay safe to both of you there. Mr. Daniel Kovalik, their author and activist, joining us from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and Paul Lurie, a former U.S. government advisor, joining us out of Berkeley, California, both from the States. And this brings us to the end of your Spotlight program, everyone. Thank you for tuning in, and bye-bye for now.
Why there is a need for a government which will be established by the Wali of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
In one of the letters that he writes to Sheikh Mufid, he tells us one of the ways that we can end the ghibah.
Let us see how one can prepare for the advent of the zuhur of Imam Mahdi, Sahib al-Zaman.
This is Dialogue, an introduction to the most important dialogues and conversations of Imam al-Mahdi, alayhi salam. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. The program is Dialogue, and I'm your host, Mahdi. Today we want to talk about one of the great personalities in the history of Islam, Imam al-Mahdi, ajalallahu ta'ala farajahu sharif. Please stay tuned. The 12th divinely appointed Imam, Imam al-Mahdi, may Allah hasten his reappearance, is the one who brings hope to all of humanity. As the world is being grinded between the oppressors and tyrants of the age, we look towards the heavens so that the advent of the 12th divinely appointed Imam comes sooner. We raise our hands in prayers and we raise our hands in supplications so that the awaited Savior of humanity comes and brings the final hope and salvation that humanity is so yearning for and desiring. The sights and the eyes of the world are looking towards the advent of this great Savior, Imam al-Mahdi. May Allah hasten his reappearance so that his eminence comes to establish the divine rule of the Almighty Allah for every single human being is completely dependent and needs this divine rule of the Almighty Allah. And it is this divine rule of the Almighty Allah, the kingdom of God that is to be established by Imam al-Mahdi, may Allah hasten his reappearance, which will bring about ultimate justice in a world which is filled with cruelty and injustice. Welcome back. It's an honor and a blessing to have you with us. You're listening to Dialogue on IRIB English Radio. So, dear friends, we are talking about the dialogues of the 12th divinely appointed Imam, Imam al-Mahdi, alayhi salam. His eminence is the awaited savior of humanity. There is an interesting conversation and dialogue that His Eminence has with Uthman ibn Sa'id. And in this conversation, Imam al-Mahdi, may Allah hasten his reappearance, says, "If the Almighty Allah, exalted and glorified be He, permits me to reappear, I would present truth in the best form and the most illuminated argument and sign, and I would have made myself apparent and established the proof. But the will of Allah, the Almighty, is more dominant and cannot be subverted, and Allah's decision does not change, and the time decided by Allah has not become apparent." So a very, you know, interesting conversation and dialogue and little segment of this much longer dialogue that Imam al-Mahdi, ajalallahu ta'ala farajahu sharif, has with Uthman ibn Sa'id. And so here, again, we are taught these various theological aspects of the 12er Shia Islam, namely here that going into the occultation of the 12th Imam and coming out of the occultation of the 12th Imam, may Allah hasten his reappearance, is in the hands of the Almighty Allah. It is a decree and it is an order of the Almighty Allah. And so in order to reappear and to come out of occultation, this, of course, will happen with the permission of Allah, the Almighty. And, of course, the timing of this return
is something that only the Almighty Allah knows. And so this means that Imam al-Mahdi, may Allah hasten his reappearance, is not aware of the exact time of the reappearance either, because this is one of those hidden secrets, as the Imam himself says, that it is the will of Allah and the decision of Allah that this occultation continues until the specified time. And at the specified time, we will see that the Almighty Allah will allow the Imam to reappear. And of course, when His Eminence does reappear, we pray that it happens soon. His Eminence himself says that he will present truth in the best form, and he will present the most illuminated and luminous of arguments and signs, and that he will make himself apparent and establish the proof and the hujjah on the evidence of Allah upon the earth, so that doubt and suspicion and unfaithfulness vanishes when humanity sees the awaited Savior of humanity with this truth in the best form, in the most beautiful form, and these signs that cannot be denied. We only pray that the Almighty Allah hastens this time and permits the Imam of the time to reappear. This is Dialogue, Imam al-Mahdi, ajalallahu ta'ala farajahu sharif. IRIB English Radio. Please follow our radio programs and podcasts on iranradio.ir. And now we invite you to listen to Sister Khalfan.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitani rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Let us see how one can prepare for the advent of the zuhur of Imam Mahdi, Sahib al-Zaman. It doesn't mean that we are sitting here eating and drinking and making merry and people there are suffering out there. No, the least we can do is to be concerned, to send some relief, to pray for them. It shows that you should share the suffering without having anyone to share. A person who doesn't have anyone to share his feelings with him should have somebody to share his suffering. And Islam calls out for that. And Imam's advent will become closer if one does that. So such statements and more from many other du'as show that we want to be so united publicly and privately so that no one in the society suffers. And then this paves a way for his advent and the greatest revolution to make this world be ruled by an infallible Imam, that is Imam Mahdi. So also, you know, in Dua Ahad, we give salams on behalf of every Muslim. Allahumma balligh maulana sahib al-zaman salawatullahi alayhi an jamil mu'minina wal mu'minat fi mashariq al-ardi wa magharibiha barriha wa bahriha wa sahliha wa jabaliha. That means we are giving salams on behalf of ourselves, our family, people who are dead or no more, and people who are alive living in, you know, mountains and seas and far off, you know, and our parents and our children and all those. That shows that we all want to be united, and that's how this will bring his advent closer. Inshallah, if you practice this, definitely Imam's zuhur will be closer. That is to imagine his huzur, that he is present just now and he's looking at our deeds, to practice all these things and to become unified. And that's how his zuhur will be closer. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad wa ajjil farajah.
Thank you very much for listening to this episode of the program, Dialogue. For more information, visit our website at iranradio.ir. Until another episode, God bless you and fi amanillah.
us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Said Puraza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Said Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
Amid the devastation and despair, the people of Gaza have faced relentless bombardment, starvation, and displacement. Yet through this enduring crisis, one thing has remained unshaken in their collective spirit, their unwavering commitment to their lawful right of resistance.
After nearly 18 months of genocide, the people of Gaza have taken to the streets in an uprising against occupation, mass killings, and starvation, especially in Beit Lahia. The Israeli regime attempts to manipulate and sow division against the resistance is doomed to fail. Our resistance is inseparable from our existence, an undeniable right we will never relinquish.
Despite its advanced weaponry and relentless attempts to crush Gaza's spirit, the Israeli occupation has failed to break the will of the Palestinian people. Its brutal campaigns targeting civilian areas have only laid bare the true barbarity of the regime.
As Palestinians, our heart and soul are with the resistance. Our people remain aware of Israeli conspiracies. What the occupation failed to achieve through military force, it will not accomplish through deceptive plots.
While Israel's genocide continues, a more subtle and insidious attempt is being made, exploiting people's marches against the genocide in Beit Lahia, who erupted calling for the end of the Israeli war.
As the Israeli brutality intensifies, it is clear that the Gaza Strip will continue to be the battleground, not only for physical survival, but for the ideological and cultural soul of the Palestinian people. Ad Ibrahim, Gaza City.
The Israeli regime launched new airstrikes on several towns and cities across Lebanon on Friday in violation of a ceasefire with the Arab country. After two drone attacks, Israeli rockets targeted the Beirut southern suburbs, destroying two buildings.
As Lebanon marked Al-Quds Day, the Israeli occupation forces continued to pound the country, and for the first time since the ceasefire, Israel struck a residential neighborhood in South Beirut in an act which could jeopardize the already fragile truce.
The sounds of explosions were heard. Ambulances and firefighter trucks ran to the site, yet the rallies to commemorate Al-Quds Day did not stop. Hezbollah officials stress that despite the Israeli threats and continuous aggression, the resistance in Lebanon will not forsake Al-Quds.
On this blessed day, and in light of the current circumstances, we say that we renew our pledge to Al-Quds. We will not forsake Al-Quds. Together with all the honorable people in the nation, in Palestine and the Arab and Muslim world, and with the free people of the world, we will hold the banner of Al-Quds.
Palestinian activists also stress that Imam Khomeini knew that defeating the arrogant tyrants and achieving victory is only possible if the Muslims and Arabs were united and mobilized for the sake of Al-Quds.
لقد عجز الأعداء جميعا
Our enemies have failed in their attempts to break the resistance despite the continued atrocities. Their barbaric genocide against the people of Palestine and the aggression on Lebanon and Yemen since the victory of the Islamic Revolution in Iran. They have tried to weaken Iran since it is the only firm supporter of the resistance in the region, but they have failed.
It is Al-Quds that unites the Arabs and Muslims, and on this day we see the culmination of the efforts to face the common enemy. It is the shout of the oppressed in the region, but it is also the shout of the human conscience to confront the occupiers and liberate the Holy Land.
People of various faiths took part in Al-Quds Day celebrations in solidarity with Palestine and highlighted resistance as the only path to victory against the occupying regime. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
Israeli authorities have released Palestinian filmmaker Hamdan Bilal, a co-director of the Oscar-winning documentary No Other Land, after detaining him overnight. Bilal was in Sousia, a village in the occupied West Bank, when a group of Israeli settlers violently attacked him. Despite his injuries, Israeli soldiers arrested him instead of his assailants.
Settlers and army, they attacking my home and they beating me. They continue to beating me. It's like around between 15, 20 minutes until I was bleeding from all my head and face. And finally, after this attack, they took me to the place. I don't know what is it. I stay there. It's like all the night. They was laughing about me.
Bilal was taken into custody and was held overnight before being released.
On Monday, there was a massive attack on Sousia village where my friend and colleague and co-director of No Other Land documentary, Hamdan Bilal, lives. There was an attack in his home and other houses in the village. Settlers and soldiers targeted him precisely to revenge against the success of the movie and against Hamdan as an activist in the village that documenting the attacks of the settlers that happening on his village all the time and other villages in Masafer Yatta. This is not an isolated attack. Attacks happening all the time, but this time it was revenge and attack on Hamdan for his success to try to punish him and to silence him and to prevent him from doing his work.
Bilal's documentary No Other Land, co-directed with Palestinian and Israeli filmmakers, sheds light on the forced displacement of Palestinians. This incident raises further concerns about the growing attacks on Palestinian journalists and activists. As Israeli violence escalates, documenting the reality on the ground is being silenced. Naqa Hamid, Ramallah, Occupied West Bank.
Palestine action supporters out in raucous numbers again outside the Old Bailey courthouse, demanding that the 18 members of the direct action group on trial here be released.
This is a court where people are tried for gruesome, brutal murders. And these people are on trial for actually trying to stop gruesome and brutal murders. In fact, there is a case here today of a couple who murdered their baby and put the baby in a plastic bag. In Gaza right now, people are putting their body parts of their loved ones in plastic bags every day. So the irony is, these people should not be anywhere near a court for trying to stop people from being murdered.
The 18 activists were arrested under the UK's Terrorism Act in August last year for targeting Israeli weapons manufacturer Elbit Systems' Filton facility in Bristol and causing over $1 million in damages to it. Their supporters say their prosecution is not aimed at upholding the law.
The trial is part of a wider pattern, from arrests to censorship. The activists here say the British state is criminalizing dissent to protect Israel against accountability and scrutiny. They argue that standing up for Palestinian rights is being treated as a crime.
Sarah Cote of Stand Up to Racism, Stand Up to Imperialism has experienced it firsthand. She, too, was arrested under counterterrorism legislation, accused of supporting a proscribed organization merely for saying Palestinians had the right to defend themselves.
This is what the British state does. It's the oldest imperialist nation in the world, and it's going to try by any means possible to defend its interests. And its interests lie in the continued genocide of the Palestinian people and the repression of popular movements around the world.
But the crackdown doesn't seem to be working. While the British government treats the Fulton 18 as lawbreakers and homegrown terrorists, their supporters hail them as heroes and consider them as political prisoners.
They're imprisoned because the UK state is trying to protect its relationship and its financial ties to Israel. And this is the extent that they'll go to. They're political prisoners because they have been imprisoned not for their actions, but for the government's politics and for the government's allegiances with their military outpost, aka the Zionist entity.
As Gaza continues to face relentless bombing and siege, the protesters here say they won't be silenced, vowing to keep demanding justice despite the risks. Saeed Porizza, London.
Under a unified sky, the territorial waters of Iran mirror a nation's resolve, coming alive as over 3,000 naval vessels participate in a monumental naval parade showcasing unwavering support for Palestine. The massive parade also demonstrates the strength and readiness of IRGC's naval forces, sending a strong message to adversaries just one day prior to international Quds Day rallies. This is not just a show of maritime prowess, but a symbol of solidarity, with the flags of Iran and Palestine waving proudly.
This is the fourth year that the naval parade is being held to mark the occasion, featuring civilian vessels from volunteer forces alongside other naval ships. First and foremost, this event sends a strong message of solidarity with Palestine. It also demonstrates to the Caspian Sea littoral states that this body of water represents friendship. Also, it demonstrates that Iran is always ready to support its people and protect its sovereignty against threats, as the parade is taking place simultaneously along the coast of the Persian Gulf and the Sea of Oman.
The parade, conducted simultaneously in Iran's territorial waters from the Persian Gulf and the Sea of Oman to the Caspian Sea, features a variety of vessels, from advanced naval warships to smaller boats manned by besieged volunteer forces, all proudly displaying the flag of Palestine next to the Iranian banner.
The event you are witnessing today is a naval parade conducted by the Iranian Navy and volunteer forces. Here at our naval base, 150 vessels of volunteer forces and 30 vessels from the IRGC Navy's northern base are participating in the parade in the north. This parade demonstrates solidarity with the oppressed people of Palestine and condemns the atrocities committed by the Israeli regime in Gaza. Additionally, it aims to showcase the military strength of the volunteer forces and to enhance unity among the various branches of the armed forces.
Ahead of international Quds Day rallies, this maritime demonstrations has tuned into an annual tradition, underscoring the enduring bond between Iran and Palestine.
And that's the message from Iran's territorial waters: unity, strength, and unwavering support for Palestine ahead of Quds Day, showcasing Iran's maritime resolve and solidarity to the world. Fateh Masumi, Babolsar.
The Israeli occupation continues to escalate, pushing further into southern Syria and now directly targeting civilians. But the people of Syria did not stand idly by. Residents fiercely resisted the unprecedented Israeli expansion, engaging in clashes with advancing forces and sacrificing martyrs and injuries in defense of their land.
The Israeli occupation attempted to impose its presence by force on farmers in Koya, but the Syrian people naturally reject colonialism and occupation. This led to confrontations in the village, where brave men stood up against the aggression, sacrificing their lives in defense of their land.
The people of Dara and the occupied Golan reaffirm their unwavering connection to Damascus. No amount of Israeli pressure, intimidation, or incentives can change that. Resistance is their natural right, enshrined in international law, and they will continue to fight against the occupation.
The reaction in Dara reflects absolute rejection of the occupation. If Israel's actions go unchallenged, mere condemnations will only pave the way for negotiations that compromise Syrian rights. That's why we support all forms of popular resistance aimed at expelling the occupiers.
For Syrians, history has shown that Israel only understands the language of force, empty condemnations and international resolutions will not drive the occupation out of Syrian land. The youth of Syria refuse to surrender to an occupier that thrives on destruction and terror, standing instead in solidarity with the resistance in the south.
Neither condemnations nor UN resolutions would force the Zionist entity to withdraw from occupied territories. Liberation can only be achieved through armed resistance. The youth of Syria refuse to submit to this brutal occupation and stand firmly with the heroic resistance in the south.
Despite the delayed condemnation by the ruling Syrian regime, the Israeli occupation continues to escalate its aggression. However, for Syrians, the path forward remains clear: resistance until victory.
Flags of the resistance front waving proudly in unison. On this occasion, in the heart of the Iranian central city of Isfahan, people from all walks of life are present. Young and old alike filled the iconic Imam Khomeini Square, passionately reiterating their solidarity and unwavering support for the Palestinian people on International Quds Day.
We view it as our religious duty to participate in this march. Our participation is inspired by our leader, and we want to convey to the Palestinian people that we will always stand by them. They will never be left alone, and we will never stop supporting their cause.
I am a tourist in Isfahan, and since I participate in this march every year, I joined again this year to show support for the people of Gaza and the Palestinian children. Each time I witness their suffering and loss, I am moved to tears. Even now, as I am speaking to you, I am tearing up, and my heart is heavy with emotion.
Our leader has called upon us to participate in the march this day to defend the oppressed people of Palestine.
This unwavering support and solidarity serve as a powerful source of inspiration for younger generations. It fosters a deep sense of commitment and unity, encouraging them to stand up for justice and advocate for the rights of those who are oppressed.
When we witness the tragic loss of thousands of children in one part of the world, we cannot remain indifferent. It is crucial for us to discern between truth and falsehood, and I recognize that my presence here symbolizes a commitment to fight against falsehood while standing firmly in support of the truth. From the depths of my heart, I truly wish I could be in Palestine, actively contributing to the cause. I urge people around the world to take to the streets and openly declare their support for those who are suffering.
The voices rise in unison, echoing a message of hope and resilience for those facing oppression. As the day unfolds, the spirit of unity and determination shines brightly, symbolizing the enduring fight for justice.
As chants echo and flags wave on International Quds Day, the message remains clear. This annual event stands as a powerful symbol of resistance, one that will endure and continue through time. Farzan Ashuriyun, Isfahan.
Let's listen to the famous reciters of the Holy Quran in the month of Allah. Brother Muhammad Reza Birya, only in IRIB English Radio.
Assalamu alaikum, dear brothers and sisters. Welcome to this segment of the month of Allah. In this segment, we'll be talking about famous reciters of the Quran in the world of Islam. Today, we're going to be talking about Sheikh Shahat Muhammad Anwar. Iranians very much like this reciter, especially those who are fans of Quran recitation. He first visited Iran in the 1990s and he was warmly received by all Iranians. This great reciter was born in 1950 in the Qahliya Governorate of Egypt. He memorized the Quran at an early age and then learned the rules of tajweed and other sciences pertaining to the recitation of the Quran. There were other reciters in this region who Sheikh Shahat Anwar was very much influenced by them, especially Sheikh Abdul Samad Az-Zanati. This reciter influenced Sheikh Shahat Muhammad Anwar the most. And of course, another reciter was Sheikh Hamdi Zamil. Sheikh Shahat Muhammad Anwar quickly became a very talented reciter. He had a very beautiful voice, a very good voice, and he became famous all over Egypt and all over the world. He visited Iran several times. The first time that he visited Iran, he recited the Quran in different cities of Iran. One of his best recitations was in Mashhad, the place where Sheikh Shahat Anwar had called the center of Quran recitation in the world after Egypt. He recited Surah Al-Ma'idah, verses 114 to 115 in Mashhad. Sheikh Shahat Muhammad Anwar has three sons. His first son and his third son, his eldest son and his third son, who are Sheikh Anwar Shahat and Sheikh Mahmoud Shahat, respectively, are both very good reciters of the Quran. And they visit Iran occasionally to recite the Quran. Sheikh Shahat Muhammad Anwar had told his sons, these two sons of his, that when you go to Iran, make sure that you recite the Quran well. Make sure that you care about Iran. And that is what we see when we look at the recitations of Sheikh Anwar Shahat and Sheikh Mahmoud Shahat. We see that they recite the Quran very well when they come to Iran. Sheikh Shahat Muhammad Anwar, in his late 40s, or early 40s, he contracted a disease which was, he couldn't recite the Quran anymore. It was a disease of the larynx. And he couldn't recite the Quran anymore. And in the year 2008, at the age of 58, Sheikh Shahat Muhammad Anwar passed away. May Allah bless this reciter and elevate his ranks. With this introduction, let's listen to Surah Al-Ma'idah, verses 114 to 115 by Sheikh Shahat Anwar, which was performed in Mashhad. Let's enjoy this recitation.